If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
What's the point?
Here's John Williams.
People aren't going to listen. Hi, it's John.
In the Allstate Skyline Studios, weekdays from 1 to 3, Saturdays 10 to noon. This is John Williams. Hi, how are you? I'm done mumbling. Bertrand's not here to bother me anymore. Actually, he's about to trade seats with Andrea, so maybe he'll return. But I thought it was a good idea when I recommended a particular book, but I totally understand, the more I think about it, Steve's point.
He could have just said, oh, okay.
Right.
Thanks, John.
He could have taken it.
But here's the problem. Desk.
When you give, and I'm trying to think of, this reminds me of a couple of other things. It's sort of like when somebody really wants you to watch a movie, and what they're also saying is, I want 2 hours of your life. And maybe you don't want to give 2 hours. When you give somebody a book and really hope that they read it, think about the imposition that is. Like if I gave him the book and was kept bugging him, well, what did you think? What did you think? He's either got to tell me to go away or he's got to read the book. And I know he would love it if he did because it's really good. I can't believe he doesn't want to read it, but that's his business, Andrea.
I bet he'll read it. Well, then again, it's Steve. Maybe not.
He will not.
No. This is the guy, John, I gave a Christmas card to 1 year. And I said, Steve and Sharon, Merry Christmas. You know, it was probably, I had known Steve maybe 2 years at this point.
Yeah.
This is a long time ago. So we opened it up. He said, oh, that's great. So we took a Sharpie and he crossed out his name and put my name,
and then
did the same with the salutation with the goodbye part. You know, Merry Christmas, love, yeah. Andre, put love, Steve. Yeah, I don't even think he put love, but then he handed it back to me. I said, thanks, Steve.
I just remember when there was Beta versus VHS, or when it was Apple versus everybody else. You know, where it was like, should you get this phone or that phone, this computer or that computer, and there just seemed to be so much tribalism going on, and everybody had a team, and if you weren't on that team, they would look at you like, oh, you don't have Beta, you don't have an iPhone,
right.
You know, you don't have a Garmin, what are you talking about? And I sense less of that these days, maybe because there are just so many options for everything, but it is that way maybe with like a Netflix series, right, where people are like, oh, you've got to watch this. And if you don't, you really feel like you're out of it. But those people, however good their intentions are, this is my point, are annoying.
True.
I mean, it's like, all right, already, stop advocating. As soon as you start to work it that hard, then I start to just, my defenses go up. I'm sure that's a natural reaction, and that's what I'm getting from Steve.
It's almost like you're shamed, because people ask me about The Handmaid's Tale for the longest time, and when I said, oh, no, I'm up to date now, but at the time, John, I hadn't seen it, and they were like, you haven't seen The Handmaid's Tale? What's wrong with you?
Do you still get to vote in elections? I mean, oh, my God, who are you?
Do you still have a BlackBerry, too?
Yeah, right, exactly. So maybe what I'll just say is, I believe the art of it is to not say, hey, read this book like I did, and I want it back because I know I'm going to share it with other people. I should have just kind of left it on his desk there and said, boy, oh boy, that's a pretty good book. You know, soft-pedaled it.
Do you want me to read it? And then I'll say, oh, you don't know what you're missing with this book that John gave me.
Yeah, maybe that would
all
work.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you, Andrea.
You bet.
Darlis. Steve Bertrand will swap seats with her. You'll get a completely different version of that in a few minutes. You know, I said that the guy who, you may have seen the stories in the news, and that says that there is a company in Michigan that said that they can build the wall that the president wants, not for the $8 billion that he needs for the wall, per se. There's so many different numbers, but at least one article I saw today said that, you know, the construction of that 200-plus mile wall is at about $8 billion. And then there's this company in Michigan that builds stuff and did build one of the prototypes, and they said, oh, we can do it for 1.4, 1.2. We can get it done for a lot less. I still think me and some of my high school buddies with a pickup truck and enough beer could build it for a lot less than $1 billion. I mean, okay, it's work. Say a wall from here to Springfield, but $8 billion? You know, that's Chris Bryant money. It's funny when the government gets involved in things, how expensive they get. Anyway, the people behind this project, to offer a more reasonable offer, the president of the company is going to join us tomorrow, as will Steve Gadlin. Do you have the Steve Gadlin music? This is just delightful. This is the I Want to Draw a Cat for You song as performed by Chicago's Steve Gadlin when he was on Shark Tank pitching his business to them.
Hey there, sharks. My name is Steve. I got an offer that you won't believe. For the low, low price of just 10 grand, you get a quarter of my company. You understand?
Then he does a little dance.
You go to my site, you describe a cat. I draw it. I mail it. It's as easy as that. I'd invest if I were you, and I want to draw a cat for you. I'll draw you a cat that's short and fat. I'll draw you a cat with a pork pie hat. I'll draw you a cat.
Literally, people would. And so he's doing this little dance and song for the five of them there on, I think it was five of them that day, maybe four, on Shark Tank. And they laughed. And then Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, right, he said, okay, I'm in. And he gave him several $1,000s and owns part of the company. And for a while, Steve Gadlin's business got that sort of shot in the arm, and business went up too, although it was going pretty well. But for $10, you would tell him somebody that you want him to draw a cat for, and then he would personalize it. I have a friend who's in construction. I have a friend who's a teacher. And then he would draw a cat, but really a line drawing of a cat. Nothing sophisticated. He does it with a magic marker, and it takes him a few minutes, and then he sends it to that person, and you give him $10. And that was a going thing for him for a while. Bill and Wendy earlier today were talking about a scam that Bill was navigating. A guy called up and said he was with the police and they were trying to rip him off with his credit card information or something like that. And Bill was smart enough to see through it. Props to you, Bill. But it made me think of what happened to this Steve Gadlin guy. Because Bill said, I wonder if anybody strings these people along and how long you can string them. And I said, listen, the greatest story of that of all time is Steve Gadlin's. Steve's going to come on our show tomorrow as well. I talked to him and I said, let's do it tomorrow, Steve, and get all our ducks in a row. And I don't remember exactly all of the details of the story, although I was a little involved in it. But it goes something like this. The guy reached out to him and said, you know, he knows a prince in Africa, and if you just give him your credit card number, then you'll get a lot of money and he'll be free and he'll share his riches, but we need your credit card number to get him out or something like that, right? You know those scams. And so Gadlin texts back to the guy or emails back to the guy and says, well, and I don't know exactly what the dialogue went back and forth, but it did go back and forth. And finally, Gadlin said, look, you want some money from me and I'll give you some money, but you have to do something legit. And they started to write a play. I think it was a musical. This guy scamming him in Africa. And in his broken English, he started then to, from Africa, write this play. And Gadlin ended up putting it on at one of the theaters in town. It needed a narrator, and that's where I came in. I was the sort of Bill Curtis voice of the show. I don't remember a lot about it. But I said, Steve, you've got to come back and tell me how that happened. It's a very funny story. And we'll do that tomorrow as well. Got me to thinking about credit card scams. And a friend of mine said to me last week, I said, how was your day? And he said, well, somebody stole my credit card. They were running up purchases that obviously I wasn't making. The credit card company calls, and so they canceled the card. And we all know how fun that song and dance is. But my friend said that he thinks he knows where the card was compromised. He told me the name of the store. It's one that you and I would recognize. And he says, I'm pretty sure, because I know I went to that store and I used the credit card there. And then shortly thereafter, it was compromised. So maybe it was somebody at that store that literally took the credit card information. As much as we are into like securing our stuff, it's amazing if you think about it, how often you give your credit card number away. To somebody online, to a company, to your buy. If you order something online, you got to enter your credit card number. I've read it to people over the phone. I don't know. You give it to waiters and waitresses. How do you know they're not copying it down, right? So we're really, really vulnerable. And my friend thinks he knows where it was compromised. And he said there ought to be a way to figure that out. I read a story online today about a guy who similarly had his credit card compromised. And they said it was used at this store and that restaurant and that place. And so he started going to all of those places. He was a private investigator. And he started to ask them about the purchases that were made there. And does anybody remember? And in time, a sort of description of the person emerged. And he was able to, one way or another, figure out who the person was that stole his credit card. He knew the name, the place, the person, and everything. And it was $14,000 that the guy had run up. And then he calls the FBI and says, I've got the guy. Here he is. The FBI didn't do anything about it. I don't know what you would do with that. I don't know if anybody's ever tried to sort of track down the person that ripped them off that way. And really, they didn't rip you off. They ripped everybody off because generally your credit card company covers your purchases. You're not out. They are. And then we all just pay more for credit cards and the interest rates go up. But I'd sure like to know if anybody else had success with that. My number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. So, John, what's the book? Oh, yeah. Shame on me. The book is An American Summer, Love and Death in Chicago by Alex Kotlowitz, the author of There Are No Children Here, the famous Chicago writer whose book I just cannot put down. Here's how good, and Steve will never know this, An American Summer is. It's about a summer in Chicago in 2012, I think it was. He doesn't spend a lot of time on the dates, but he has the month and the day on the front of the chapters. So it's like, here's this weekend. And you go through a summer in Chicago. And it's about the violence and the lives of the people and how they're affected. So it's really, really good that way. It's called An American Summer. And here's how good the book is. I was on the L, and I had my nose so buried in the book that then I looked up and thought, oh, this is my stop, and I jumped off the train. It wasn't my stop. Don't you hate it when that happens? So I had to walk a little bit longer to work yesterday. All right, all the phone lines are ringing, and I'm not exactly sure why. We'll find out and pick up your phone calls next on WGN. I'm with Steve. I don't read books people give me and likely lose them. I also don't watch TV shows that people tell me I have to watch. I fully realize I have authority issues, and I feel no need to cave into peer pressure. Yes, you do have authority issues. People are just trying to help. They're just trying to be friendly. Hey, have you watched this series? Hey, you ought to listen to this podcast. That's a tough one for me because everybody's got a great podcast.
Well, see?
There's a million of them. And to me, I've got to download it. I've got to listen to it. And what if I start to like it? Those things go forever. I don't want to pick up a new podcast.
And I try never to say if I recommend a show, have you watched it? Did you see it? What'd you think? Because it just puts pressure on people, you know?
It's, oh, yeah.
Just because you like it.
I'm not going to pressure you. Don't you worry about it. Yeah. By the way, if you're interested in any good reading, I've got a book. But listen, you decide when you want to.
You're bullying me. You're a
nice
bully.
Book. Hey, if you need new windows or doors for your home, call the company recommended by Lou Manfredini of House Smarts Radio. Call Gilkey Windows. Gilkey manufactures the highest quality vinyl and fiberglass windows in an endless variety of styles and colors. Call Gilkey now for a limited time. You can buy one and get 40% off the fiberglass or vinyl windows and doors, or up to 5 years, no interest financing. Call Gilkey, 888-3-GILKEY. 888-3-GILKEY. Hey, John, why aren't you talking about Shock? That would be Aaron Shock, the former congressman from Peoria. I guess I could. Elifab asked me if we wanted to do something on that today, and I took a pass. He was the former Peoria congressman who
used... It is a huge shock. No, it is. I mean...
Why?
That they dropped all the charges?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, this was a rising star. He, you know... And if he agrees, I mean, he's not pleading guilty, but he's agreeing to pay back, I think, about $100,000.
Yeah.
He could run for office again.
Why did they not pursue the charges since it was so clear he was abusing his congressional perks?
I don't know what's left. You know, I've been doing other things in the past hour, so I don't know everything that's gone into it yet.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. You're right, though. And remember, he's the guy that would travel and take a lot of fun pictures of himself. Boy, did he have terrific abs.
He was on the cover of Men's Health.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kevin, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for joining us. What did you want to say? Hi, Kevin.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
I'm an attorney here in Chicago. I do plaintiff's personal injury. And so I had an account at a bank that I would deposit. It's called an escrow account. I would deposit my client when it was a settlement check, or deposit the settlement check into the account and then write a check to my client and to myself.
Sure.
And I had this account compromised by somebody who wrote a check off the account from some, just, he picked it, he made up a check, wrote it off the account, somehow got the account number.
Right.
And then after that attempt in trying to cash that check, which I immediately stopped because I checked the account every day, there were several attempts to debit the account. And we knew into which account he or she was trying to deposit my checks.
Ah.
And the bank had no interest whatsoever, none, in ascertaining who this person was and prosecuting them. I asked them, what do I have to do? And they were singularly unhelpful in telling me where I have to go and which police department it would be. It was the most frustrating. I had to close an account that had been in existence for 30 years.
Why aren't they interested in finding it? It's their money, too, or at least their...
See, that's the thing. It's not their money. What happened here was, because I caught it so quickly, the bank reversed the charges, if that's the right, that's not the right term, but the bank
credited,
did not
you,
pay
yeah.
on the check. That's what they did not do.
Oh, really? So that guy never got the cash?
He never got the cash, but then there were several other attempts at invading this account, and they were attempts to debit the account, not via checks, but ACH debits. And so that's why I had to close the account. But what drove me crazy was that the bank had no interest
yeah.
in finding out who this scammer was and helping me prosecute him, which I would have happily done.
Yeah, no kidding, especially given your background. I wonder if the fact that you have the routing number and stuff like that, somebody was able to get it, but is the bank able to figure out where that person is with that information?
What they were able to figure out is into which account that check was deposited.
Yeah.
You understand? Because
then he's got access to it, but I mean, or in theory he would have had access to it. But I still wonder, does that help them physically know where this person is? I want this guy to go to jail, right?
So which is exactly what I wanted.
But how do we find him based on the fact that we know an account number, right?
Presumably we know the account into which he or she is trying to deposit this check
yeah.
and into which he or she is trying to deposit ACH debits from this account of mine.
Yeah.
And once we know who the account is, it's a very simple thing to check out with the bank. All right, who made this deposit on this date?
Yeah.
Now, at least I would think that. But what frustrated me so much was them just basically telling me, well, we have to close your account, open a new one. And I got to tell you that opening a new escrow account, not easy. Took me several days to do it and several hours over at the bank. Now, with all the fraud issues that are going on, you know, the bank needs certain information before you can open up a new account. And it was a pain in the butt.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you called. I'm sorry that happened, but thanks for the heads up.
You're welcome.
Yeah. That's interesting. It's your money, not the bank's. By the way, Steve, just speaking of the news, isn't it nice that Hillary Clinton's not going to run for office? That is, for president.
Yeah.
I say that only to say this. I don't know if she'd win. I don't know if she'd lose. I don't know if she'd be a good president or a bad president. I think it's good for her mental health and the mental health of the United States of America if she doesn't run. That's all I'm saying. I voted for her previously. I could probably be persuaded to vote again if it was between her and Donald Trump. I'm like, okay, give me another shot at that. We'll have blue cocktails. But in the meantime, I just think there's 14 candidates in the run right now. And
yeah, I'm tired of people announcing their candidacy.
Frankly. I am kind of too.
I mean, people keep saying it's good you have more voices, but, you know, I
guess we need to be patient, right? Like, let this process take its course. We're not going to have to vote for all 14 of them. Some of them will drop out.
Well, I mean, they won't drop out for a year, right? The first primaries are coming up about a year from now.
Well, you don't believe Warren's going anywhere, and you don't believe Klobuchar's going anywhere fast. Bernie never stopped running. Kamala Harris is a person with staying power.
Beto's not in yet.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's not technically a candidate. You've got John Hickenlooper from Colorado. Jay Inslee,
Washington.
Oh, good. Bernie Sanders, we know of him. Amy Klobuchar, the Minnesota senator, who's got this stupid piece of baggage that will get lost and it'll be fine.
Cory Booker in or out?
Cory Booker is in. Elizabeth Warren is in.
Eric Holder out.
Holder out. The mayor of South Bend, Indiana, just got his book, but I'm not going to recommend it. The mayor of South Bend, Pete Buttigieg?
Buttigieg? I think, yeah, Buttigieg.
Kamala Harris, Gillibrand, Julian Castro. You've got the Hawaii Democrat, Gabbard, Tulsi Gabbard. Marianne Williamson, who's the best-selling author of spiritual books. Richard Ojeda, the former Representative John Lennon.
John Quincy Adams, I think, is running.
And John Delaney, former Maryland congressman. So
Delaney, is he the guy? There's one guy who's basically been living in Iowa. No, I mean it. I think
I don't blame him.
Yeah.
But what's the point of that? I don't know. Maybe we'll find these people and fall in love with them. I'm just glad that Hillary's not running. Did you see the story the other day that, and I'm going to use the word that I recall them using, and that is cure, that another person was cured of AIDS? This would be the second person ever described as London patient. They didn't say specifically who it was. I guess in Europe they have some HIPAA too. But this patient was cured of their AIDS, and it is the second time it's happened. You know, one of the things I thought when I heard the story was that that's terrific. A, can we duplicate it? And B, how terrific is it compared to when, say, you first heard Magic Johnson was HIV positive and you thought, oh, my God, it's a death sentence. Magic is still alive. People are living their lives these days HIV positive. So I think it's fantastic. And I'm kind of curious about what they did and will they be able to repeat it? We reached out to Dr. Robert Murphy over at Northwestern. He is a professor of medicine in infectious diseases at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. And he's on a phone line right now. Doctor, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
That was my reaction. What was your reaction when you first read of this news?
Well, I actually wasn't really surprised, but I'm happy about it because it reaffirms what we thought when we had that first Berlin patient a few years back who got cured. Now, you have to remember that this cure was sort of a cure by, not by accident, but not by intention, in that this was another patient in London who wants to remain anonymous. It's the patient that has requested the anonymity. And this patient had Hodgkin's lymphoma, a cancer of the lymph system. He received chemotherapy, total body irradiation, and he received a stem cell transplant of his bone marrow that included the stem cells from a patient who genetically would have a very difficult time getting HIV infection. So that was his sort of luck. And this was over a year ago, and he stopped his medications, and he has no sign of the virus in his body. So he's technically a cure.
How do you know, though? I mean, can these things reoccur?
Yeah, they can. So I think we're going to have to wait another couple years to really confirm it. But they presented the data yesterday at the big AIDS conference here in Seattle, where I am right now. And they tried every way possible known technically to find the virus in this person, which is very sophisticated testing, and they cannot find it. So that doesn't mean it won't pop back, but it looks very promising that this is the second cured patient.
Hmm. Well, then, should we do that? Give everybody radiation, chemo, and stem cells?
Well, no. As you mentioned, Magic Johnson's still alive. Most people are on very good treatment, and they're getting very... They're not cured, but they're treated very successfully. You don't want to have total body irradiation and chemotherapy and get a stem cell transplant from a person like this did. That's really, really, really tough therapy. The only people that are going to get that have cancer.
Yeah, but I mean, if the person said, yeah, but that might be difficult to endure, but better that than AIDS. I mean, if...
Well, they don't have AIDS. They have HIV infection. If you get treated with the drugs that we have already, you know, you're controlled and you do quite well. You live a long lifespan and you do very well, but you are not cured. You don't want to go through the treatment that this guy went through. Nobody's going to do that. Besides, it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars.
when we first heard about HIV during the Reagan administration, it seemed like a rampant runaway death sentence for a lot of people. People were going to get it, and there was nothing we could do about it. It fought your body's ability to fight infections. It was ingenious that way. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but it's just funny how our attitude about this has changed over the last couple of decades.
Right. Well, you know, the same thing was true with diabetes before insulin was developed. Same thing is true with runaway hypertension, high blood pressure. We know that we can treat those things, and patients live quite a long time with the treatment. The same is true for HIV. If you treat the HIV, you suppress the viral replication, your immune system improves, not to normal, but it improves, and people generally do very well.
Do they have a normal lifespan?
They don't have a normal lifespan, but near normal.
Yeah. And are they able to have sex, or are they? How does it restrict their lives then if you're HIV positive and controlling it?
Well, so it's there's the whole U equal U. Have you heard that term?
No, I have not.
Yeah, yeah. You're undetectable with your virus. You're uninfectious. You cannot transmit the virus. So if you take your medicine, you can't even give it to somebody if you tried.
Really?
Yeah.
The current state of HIV with medication is that you are non-transmittable?
Right. A woman would not transmit it to her fetus.
Right.
Two sexual partners, male or female, or male-male, female-female, whatever, will not transmit it to the uninfected partner.
Wow.
It's definite. There's no doubt about it.
So I wonder what's more of a breakthrough, if you will, that drug or this potential cure?
Well, the thing about this potential cure, if this is the second case. The first case, you know, everyone was very happy about it, but that person got very ill from the treatment of the radiation and the chemotherapy. Now the second one has it, and apparently this person is doing very well, better than the first one. And the fact, what it just brings up is that it's possible. We're not going to do a bone marrow transplant and total body irradiation and chemotherapy to everybody. But, you know, maybe we can find something better tolerated that can do the same thing that happened in these guys. So it just opens the door and proves that this virus can be cured.
Well, the fact that that scheme of treatments evidently cured this person of AIDS, do we know what happened? I mean, did you just blast the body so everything died and what was left lived and the AIDS went with it? Or I mean, what happened that cured him?
Well, what happened is the virus hides out in the white blood cells. So the chemotherapy completely wipes out the bone marrow in these patients. And then if the virus happens to, in other words, it kills all the cells that it's living. If for some reason it's in some other tissue, that person also got total body irradiation. So, you know, everything got radiated, probably killed every cell that was infected with HIV. And then thirdly, the bone marrow transplant, the stem cell transplant that this person received happened to be from a person who has a genetic sort of a defect in the surface of the white blood cells that does not allow the virus to enter into the cell. So even if there was a couple of viral particles floating around, the new cells that this person had couldn't even get infected. Those three things happened.
Yeah. HIV is reported cured in a second patient, a milestone in the global AIDS epidemic, New York Times headline. But there's a difference between AIDS and HIV, right? So we're talking HIV, which is the precursor to AIDS, correct?
Right. It's the cause of AIDS. AIDS just means acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. It's a clinical condition, whereas HIV is the cause of it. HIV is a virus.
Well, if you have the syndrome, what happens to you then?
Well, if you have the syndrome, that means that your immune system is so bad, it's been so destroyed, that you're susceptible to getting all sorts of cancers and infections. And then you treat the virus, the immune system, the immunity normalizes essentially, or gets close to normal, and you don't have any of these clinical complications.
So are you saying that somebody who has the virus and develops AIDS with the treatment we have now, we're back to the conversation we had a moment ago, that they can live a normal or near normal life like a person with HIV?
Exactly. Wow. Near normal life.
Wow. Well,
and not be infectious.
which is just amazing to me. Pardon me for being a little flabbergasted by some of these details. I suppose a lot of people knew it, and you are clearly up on this, but I have not paid this close attention over the last several years. Well, I didn't realize how good it was.
One of the reasons why there's so little HIV going around now, although we still have 38,000 new cases per year in the United States, which is ridiculous. If you treat everybody, that stops the spread of the infection as well. So treatment also prevents infection.
Yeah, right, sure. Well, somebody just texted in and they said, will there ever be a vaccine for HIV?
Well, that's a great question. It's very difficult, but not impossible. And there, you know, after all these years since this was discovered in 1981, you know, there's no vaccine. However, we're getting better with the development of vaccines and continue to work on a new vaccine. But this is going to be a while.
One last thing, Doctor. You said you are at a conference right now. What's the nature of that?
This isn't the United States AIDS conference every year. It's called CROI, C-R-O-I, which stands for Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections. Technically, the HIV virus is a retrovirus, and there are several other retroviruses as well. So this is the big United States AIDS conference here. There's 4,000 people here. And yesterday, they presented the London case.
What was the reaction?
It was a positive reaction. It, like I said, it reaffirms that the original person from Berlin was cured. Now we have the London patients. So when it happened, you know, when it something's happened once, you know, that could just be like a real outlier. But now you have the second one. So that's a very good sign from a scientific standpoint, because now we just have to figure out a way to do it that's not as intense as total body irradiation and chemotherapy.
Dr. Robert Murphy is a professor of medicine in infectious diseases at Northwestern University's Feingold School of Medicine. Fascinating, doctor. So appreciate your expertise. Thanks for taking the time today.
Thanks for checking.
You betcha. Yeah, no kidding. It's so good that at least we ask. It's 150. This is WGN.
The numbers are in.
WGN Plus is where Chicago comes for podcasts.
Here's what's going on with WGN Plus. Mason Barapain is wondering what the big deal is with all this 5G cell phone stuff. The Prickly City podcast is talking about MAGA hats. And Amy Guth is hosting a brand new daily podcast. It's called The Crane's Daily Gist. She'll be chatting with a number of Crane's reporters about any and everything you need to know about the day. So look them up, huh? WGN Plus on iTunes and Google Play.
Business owners are faced with a million decisions. Some are easy.
What kind of pen should we order?
Some are harder.
Is now a good time to open a second location?
No matter what the question, ultimately, it's your call to make. At your Wintrust Community Bank, we don't think banking should be another thing you have to worry about. We provide support to make those tricky decisions a little easier. We're proud to be Chicago's bank for business. Learn more at wintrust.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Whether it's backed up, dripping, flooding, or spraying, you consider it a plumbing disaster. Well, consider ABC and consider it done. Our certified plumbers are armed with the expertise to fix any problem and are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Disasters happen, big and small, but ABC is always there to do the job once and do it right. Schedule today at 4abc.com. That's the number 4abc.com. ABC Plumbing, Sewer, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. Consider it done.
Attention investors, not earning 18 to 21%? Then you're losing. Big time. National Realty's Class A Property Fund includes only prime income producing property, built far below market value. You're secured. You're recession proof with large apartment buildings. You're diversified with income streams from multiple buildings. You have 100% of free cash flows paid to you first. This portfolio has $600 million in new construction equity value in Brooklyn, Hoboken, the Jersey, Gold Coast, and Delray Beach, Florida. National's 12-year track record of proven success with $800 million of property under management is based on prime income property only. Stop recession risk and stock market churn with diversified 18 to 21% returns for IRAs or cash flow. Once you see these Class A locations, you'll wonder what took you so long to call. Call 201-210-2727. That's 201-210-2727. An offer to buy or sell any security is only made by our private placement memorandum. Read it first and invest wisely. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. National is a real estate development firm. See us at NRIA.net.
What? More than 20,000 Chicagoland homeowners have trusted Bill Comforti at Cobblestone Development with all of their home improvement needs, windows, siding, kitchens, bath, and more. Bill and his team will get your project done on time within budget. You're thinking about that now, aren't you? Lock in 2018 pricing and save 20% on your home improvement project. Call 773-661-0606 for a free quote or visit cobblestonedevelopment.com.
You know you make me want to shout, kick my heels up and shout.
Here we go, let's do it.
Throw my head back and shout, come on now. Don't forget to say you will.
You go back and watch the video of them doing this on TV, lip syncing it, but doing it on TV. Boy, is it fun.
Say that you need me. Say that you want me. Say you want to please me. Come on now. Say, come on now. Say, come on now. Say, I still remember.
Why are you playing this for us, producer Olive? I think I know.
Pitchfork 2019 lineup has been announced. Thanks to Greg Kot in the Chicago Tribune.
And the Isley Brothers are going to headline.
They are headlining July 20th, which I'm assuming is a Friday since it's the middle day of the weekend. Or would that make it a Saturday? Okay, anywho, they're headlining on July 20th.
Yeah, it starts the 19th, so I guess that'd be Saturday. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they're the Saturday, July 20th.
Yes.
Which is weird because never mind when they have them perform. Why don't you bring it down just a tiny bit? But the Isley Brothers, but then I'm reading about it, and I guess Pitchfork has a history of featuring some old blues and soul bands from Chicago, and the Isley Brothers are one of them.
Well, last year there was Chaka Khan, Lauryn Hill, Tribe Called Quest.
And Mavis Staples is going to be there this year, too.
And that's on the 19th, alongside Haim, who I'm a fan of.
See, I know Mavis Staples, and I know the Isley Brothers. I don't know everybody else. I'm kind of, I know Belle and Sebastian. Are they there?
Yeah. Belle and Sebastian will be there.
Okay, but like, it's hard enough for me to sort of get my gumption up and go to Lollapalooza. The idea that I would go to Pitchfork, it's like, no, fella, that is not your Oldsmobile. You
Wait
do not
a minute.
Get to go to Pitchfork.
But Pitchfork is so different from Lollapalooza in a good way.
In a younger, hipper, more indie way.
So,
and I'm none of those things. So I'm like, I can't go to Pitchfork.
I don't know. I don't think I can go to Pitchfork.
So, but Mavis Staples, I could listen to Mavis Staples. That's just so. I got decisions to make. I've got to look in the mirror and say, John, can you go to Pitchfork?
I think you need to look in the mirror and say, I love you every day.
Right. Okay, who else are you digging at Pitchfork this year?
Well, Robin is always pretty good. She's just kind of fun pop.
Do you have Robin? Who are you going to play for us? Can you play Robin or who can you feature?
I can feature Haim for you.
Okay, let me hear what Haim sounds like. How do you spell this?
H-A-I-M.
Haim. H-A-I-M. Okay, I would have said Ham or Haim, just to show you what I don't know. Haim. Okay, now tell me about Robin.
I don't have her music here.
That's okay, but you like Robin.
I like Robin. You've probably heard her song, Call Your Girlfriend.
Yes, I have.
SNL did a whole sketch on that.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's her.
You watch SNL.
Him, them, is Haim, Robin is a person?
Yeah.
Is it a person named Robin?
One person named Robin.
Got it.
And then, let's see, Whitney is a famous Chicago band. They're kind of also very, kind of quiet indie music rock from
And they're
going to
be there too?
Yeah, I'd call them quiet music rock too. This is where I'd put
quiet music rock.
Oh, Steve, yeah. You can't go to Pitchfork either, Steve. If you want me to write that out for you, I will, but I'm giving you the opposite of a pass.
Okay.
You actually cannot go to Pitchfork. You're too tall for Pitchfork. Okay, it's 1:57. More about the lineup, but it's July the 19th, 20th, and 21st. And The Isley Brothers, Mavis Staples, Belle and Sebastian, and more. Still to come.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
A text.
Here's John Williams.
Has poured in. This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. You know, we're here weekdays 1 to 3 and Saturdays 10 to noon. Remember, our award-winning podcast, judged by the headliners to be the best in Chicago, is called The Mincing Rascals.
For a few more weeks, anyway.
Yeah, then they're going to announce the new winners. We did submit an application to the Headliners Club.
You worked hard on it, too.
I actually did.
I know you did.
We did 52 podcasts last year, 2018. I went back and listened to every single one of them.
Wow. Why would you do that?
Because I wanted. Because it killed me that we would have had some magical 2 minutes that they wanted that I didn't tap, so I went back and scanned through every single one.
Okay, let me ask you this. In what you submitted, were you included in it?
Well, sure, but
okay,
I mean,
good.
It didn't dwell on me.
Okay, yeah, I mean, because you're the sort of guy who would, even though it was pretty much your idea and you're the force behind it, would submit an entry that did include your own voice. I'm glad you did that.
Well, I wanted to make sure that what we had was some rapid fire.
The next question is, was I on it?
Bertrand says something, and then Patty Vasquez says something, and then Eric Zorn says something, and Scott and Justin, and so we're all kind of bam, 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 bam. But you know how it is with these things. You submit your best effort, and then you'd never know what they're looking for or who's judging. But they judged us last year to be the best podcast in Chicago, and I think you'll judge when you listen to it that it's pretty good. This texter says, hey, and by the way, that's called The Mincing Rascals. About your Aaron Schock news story, Steve. John and Steve, with Aaron Schock, did he just outlast the government? It seemed even to an average person like myself that Schock wasn't going to give up any or admit to anything that would put him in jail. I don't even think he was embarrassed. For sure he'll run for office again. Lord help us.
No, I don't think he outlasted the government at all. In fact, the Supreme Court just rejected one of his appeals. I think it was last week or a couple of weeks ago. This is just a big about face.
Yeah, maybe I should have spent some time on that today. You never know. It's one of those things where you just kind of throw up your hands and say, yeah, he's crazy politicians, whatever. I felt that way when I was watching my CNN scroll and they're doing the story about Trump's high school records. CNN's loving that. CNN needs to go back to just trying to be a neutral news organization that discerns what's most important to the American people. Much of it will be about Donald Trump, but because they hate him so much, they are just niggling at everything that comes up, even if it's true, but it doesn't deserve the prominence that CNN gives it. When the president gave that rambling 2-hour speech to CPAC, they had the 67 most outrageous lines from the president's speech.
Well, that was online?
Yes.
Right.
Okay, well, that's how I consume CNN. I mean,
well, okay.
It's a TV channel, but I look at it online every single day, and that kind of clickbait journalism thing, but it shouldn't be them.
What would you do then? Because didn't Donald Trump make a huge issue of President Obama's high school records?
Yes, he did.
Okay, and so now, so what would you do with that? How do you do that fairly?
I don't know. I honestly don't even know that you need to do it at all, except Michael Cohen mentioned it in his testimony before Congress. So now they're all going back and digging up. And lo and behold, right after Trump announced his candidacy and was calling into question some of Barack Obama's records, the high school he went to, that military academy, gets a call. And they said, listen, pull Trump's records. Don't let them get away.
So as he's doing it, as he's ripping on Obama's records.
Correct.
I mean,
he's hiding his own.
As he's ripping on Donna Brazil for giving Hillary Clinton subject areas for debate, Fox is giving him questions. You know?
I don't like that either.
You don't? Oh, that's good. You're against that, huh?
Yeah, I am.
I mean, so how do you cover that without saying it? I mean, the hypocrisy of it while it's in real time, you know, while he's decrying one thing, he's doing the same thing.
You're the one who says that nothing sticks on him
because there's always something else coming along.
It's so irresistible. So I'm thinking, you know what, this is one that doesn't matter. Or do you want to tell me that he manipulated the system to hide his high school records? Yeah, I believe that.
I don't care if he manipulated the record to hide his high school records. I care that he did it while calling for the release of someone else's. That's the part of it that's... But... I mean, I don't know, but so I don't know how you do the stories without over, or you know what I mean? Especially if you're looking online, those stories just sit there.
Right, so how much space does that take?
So it's hard to judge. So you're not really judging CNN by
by
their TV coverage.
Okay, two things. One was the 67 outrageous things from his speech. That was online. I didn't see that on TV. But they are devoting time to it on TV today.
Uh-huh.
And so help me. They're human beings. I don't blame them for not liking him. I don't like him. In fact, I'm interested in this stuff. I delve into it. But I don't think that's a productive use of my time. And I think it just shows their hand.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have to say I don't like watching their primetime stuff anymore either because it's so... There's only one story in this country.
There really is. We're talking about Pitchfork. Elif thinks that I can go to Pitchfork. I think I would get carded and sent back because I was... They would just look at me and go, yeah, not for you, fella.
You could sell snow cones, maybe something like that.
I could stand out front and say, have you read this book? It's really good. It's about politics.
Bring it back when you're done.
I need it back, though, because somebody else wants to borrow it.
Take your time. It's a good book. You'll read it in 2 days. I'll be here.
Mark wanted to say something about going to concerts at a certain age. You're on WGN. Mark, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks, John. Hey, good to talk to you. I'll tell you what. You don't have nothing to fear about going to any of those outside music festivals. Lollapalooza is one of the best-produced festivals you can ever go to. If you like live music, they do a great job of getting a good cross-section of bands in there that appeal to a wide range of tastes.
Yeah, I'm a big Lollapalooza fan. Haven't been there in a few years, but I've been a few times, and I think it's dynamite. But Lollapalooza was once, I think, what Pitchfork is now. And I felt conspicuous then, and at Pitchfork I would really feel conspicuous now. Not you, huh, Mark?
I've been there for the last 11 years. I started when I was 50. I'm 61. The kids seem to embrace me. I get in the middle of the crowd. We have a blast. I have a great time every year.
What do you wear?
You know what? I wear usually, okay, it's bad because it's cargo shorts and some kind of a flower print shirt. So I stand out like a sore thumb. But I'll tell you what, it's a blast. I have a great time every year. I really enjoy all the bands. The only bad thing is the weather occasionally, because usually I got it in August, so if you get those 100-degree days and you're in the sun, it can be brutal.
Yeah,
but,
and they,
you know, drink a lot of water.
They had some storms plow through there, too. There was a couple times where storms just, like, blew that thing up, too, where it was during or while it was going on, but it was just before or while it was going on, but, like, terrible storms have come through Pitchfork a couple times, too.
Yeah, I've been through two evacuations on Lollapalooza,
yeah.
And what was amazing was prior to that, like when the Foo Fighters played the one year, it was in a torrential downpour with thunder and lightning, and Dave Grohl was out there, and I mean, he stood out there in the middle of the stage, and it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen, because the wind is whipping on him, his hair is going, the rain is everywhere. I mean, it was torrential, and it was just, it was the most amazing thing I've seen, that he stood up there and performed. I couldn't believe they didn't close it down that year, but they close it down after that for those kind of storms.
Hey, Mark, did you see Radiohead at Lollapalooza?
I did, yes.
Oh, me too. Twice.
Yeah, that's fun. I saw them individually, too, when they came through and they played just Grant Park. So they played a solo show at Grant Park one time, and that was incredible.
I remember when Kanye did Lala, and everybody was just so transfixed by the night and the skyline and him on the stage
mm-hmm.
and the crowd. Were you there for Kanye, Mark?
You know what? A lot of times for some of those acts, like I'm not a big Kanye fan, so in some cases you know, I know that they're going to get a huge turnout. I go to the other end because usually it's empty.
That's what I did when Lady Gaga was there. When Gaga was there, I went the other way.
She was incredible.
I walked away from Gaga.
You didn't watch Lady Gaga?
I didn't.
No, I did.
I didn't.
I walked away.
She was not Lady Gaga yet when she was at Lollapalooza. She was...
Beg to differ.
Lady Gaga.
I'm saying this with all due respect, but I beg to differ.
See, this is why I can't go to Pitchfork. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yes, you can.
Mark, thank you for the call.
This is why you go to Pitchfork.
Your music is incredibly subjective, so you like what you like. Everybody likes something different. You go and see what you want. If you don't like it, you go somewhere else.
Oh, boy. Thanks for the call, Mark.
Thanks. Hey, you can check out my videos on Mr. Jamzella on YouTube.
Mr. Jamzella on YouTube.
On YouTube.
All right. Take care now.
All my Lollapalooza videos and a bunch of other concert videos up there.
All right, man. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, John. Take care, guys.
Shameless plug.
It's a really big bus. We got room for everybody. So here's how that Washington Post article starts. It's in the Tribune today. I think this is a WAPO article, though, that the Tribune is just reprinting. In 2011, days after Donald Trump challenged Barack Obama to show his records to prove that he hadn't been a terrible student, the headmaster at New York Military Academy got an order from his boss, find Trump's academic records and help bury them. Superintendent of the private school came to me in a panic because he had been accosted by a prominent wealthy alumni of the school who were Trump's friends and who wanted to keep his record secret, recalled Evan Jones, the headmaster at the time. He said, you need to go grab that record and deliver it to me because I need to deliver it to them. The superintendent, Jeffrey Coverdale, confirmed Monday that members of the school's board of trustees initially wanted him to hand over Trump's records. He refused. I was given directives. I could follow some, but some I couldn't. I moved them elsewhere on the campus where they could not be released. It's the only time I ever moved an alumnus's records. The former NYMA, New York Military Academy official's recollections add new details to one of the allegations of Michael Cohen, the president's longtime personal lawyer and fixer, made before Congress last week. Cohen, who told the Oversight Committee that part of his job was to attack Trump's critics and defend his reputation, said Trump ordered him to, quote, threaten his high school, his colleges, and the college board to never release his grades or SAT scores. Trump has frequently boasted that he was a stellar student, but he declined throughout the campaign to release any of his records. Last year, he said, I heard I was first in my class. At the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business, he graduated in 1968. The school says he's not on the record as being on the dean's list or anyone who received any academic honors.
A lot of people say he was.
A lot of people say he was first in his class.
Now, so my point is, I don't think you necessarily should see his high school scores.
I don't either, and I don't think it's important anyway.
But the point is, the first 10 words of that story, at the same time he was calling for the release of Obama's, he was acting to hide his.
Yeah.
That's the story.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Now I know that, and now I can move on. But, I mean, it doesn't change my opinion. That does not help me in any way, be I a friend or a foe.
Really? It doesn't give you a picture of him? No, I'm asking you.
That I don't already have?
Well,
no, it doesn't inform me that way. Ella said you got to need to take a break. R. Kelly was on the CBS Morning News. I watched it today. Roe had some of the audio yesterday. He also interviewed Michael Avenatti, who's representing some of these women. And Avenatti is coming on again with Roe, as I understand it, this afternoon. I just have to say one thing about the Avenatti, about the R. Kelly audio. I'm going to play a clip for you, and you tell me what this reminds you of next on WGN.
There's a very weird twist in the $1.5 billion winning Mega Millions lottery ticket. The winner came forward. If not for an act of kindness accepted by the person behind this person, the person who accepted the act of kindness would have probably gotten the winning ticket.
Now, story of a lotto ticket.
I don't think letting somebody take your place in line is worth $1.5 billion. I think that's overpayment for kindness.
The Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
So the next time somebody offers you their place in line, even if it's a jewel, don't take it.
Don't take it.
Just continue to whine behind them.
The moral of the story is get yours.
Yeah. I hope you kids are listening.
Hi, it's Lou Manfredini. I'm joined by Mike Gilkey, president and owner of the Gilkey Window Company.
Hey, Lou.
Mike, I've learned quite a bit about windows over the years, and one of the things I love about Gilkey windows is they don't look like plugged-in replacement windows.
That's right, Lou. One of our missions at Gilkey is to build the highest quality windows that maintain the architectural integrity of your home.
Now, you mentioned quality. I understand that Gilkey windows have been independently verified to be among the most energy-efficient windows in the country.
You're exactly right.
Right now, buy one Gilkey window, get one 40% off, or up to 5 years no-interest financing. Choose vinyl or choose fiberglass. Just be sure to choose Gilkey. Visit Gilkey.com to learn more, or call 888-3-GILKEY.
That's 888-3-GILKEY.
So after lunch, I need to stop at First American Bank.
Sure.
You know, they're now the largest privately held bank in Illinois.
Really?
Yeah. Assets of $4.9 billion, 53 branches nationwide.
I bank at First American.
And they're run by the owners who make business decisions right there.
I told you about First American.
Oh, right. Yeah,
I tell everyone about First American. They have the best loan deals in town, great home equity loans, low interest mortgages, checking accounts for every lifestyle, incredible personal service.
Yeah?
I told my brother-in-law to switch his business to First American because they have all the commercial lending capabilities.
And he did.
Okay.
I single-handedly propelled First American to become the largest privately held bank in Illinois.
You don't think it's because people know First American does more for their money?
Who told you that?
You're right, you did.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
You gonna buy me lunch?
First American does more for your money. Visit firstambank.com. Call us at 847-952-3700. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Sometimes our hearts don't perform as they should. They race, flutter, skip beats. At North Shore Cardiovascular Institute, our team of leading electrophysiologists is pioneering the latest care for abnormal heart rhythms. From implanting the world's smallest pacemaker to performing radiation-free ablation for AFib. All to get your heart back to normal. North Shore University Health System. Healthcare for what's next. Northshore.org/cardio.
Watch for Chicago's very own Stories with Micah and Joe. That's Micah Mateer and Joe Donlan, weeknights on WGN-TV News at 9. And this quick note, you can visit By the Yard's grand opening event in the Yorktown Center March 8th through the 10th and see why By the Yard has been reviewed as the premier maintenance-free outdoor furniture. All of those of us with furniture outdoors have to cover it up or store it somewhere in the wintertime. If you got that By the Yard stuff, it's made of a permanent product. You can leave it outside. You don't even have to cover it up. When you want to get ready to use it in the spring, you give it a good rinse and wash, and you're good to go. They're celebrating their new location by offering their best promotion ever. Save on the furniture, get free delivery, and if you're in their service area, they assemble it no charge. How about that? Shop their Yorktown or Vernon Hills locations. The grand opening is 3 days only, March 8th, March 9th, March 10th. Hey, here it comes. Request a catalog at buytheyard.net today. Okay, R. Kelly, CBS Morning News. Hit it. Cut one.
Have you ever had sex with anyone under the age of 17?
No.
Never?
No.
I have to tell you, it's so hard to believe that based on all that we've read.
I'm going
to
tell you something, Gail. There's one
about you.
I'm going to tell you something.
What women said about you.
What women said about me. What women, so nobody's allowed to be mad at me and be scorned and allow me.
Okay, so that's R. Kelly with Gail King. You know, I wish she had done the follow-up this way. She says, have you ever had sex with anybody under the age of 17? He said no. She did not then say, is it possible that somebody, you did, but you didn't know it at the time? And I think that's still a punishable offense. But she didn't ask that follow-up. And then he said, all of these people want to write a book. They want to be on a reality show. They've all got their own schemes. And so even though their stories kind of line up, it's because they all have their own agenda. They're using his fame. This is R. Kelly Cut 3. Play that one, Elif.
What? How stupid would I be to do that?
I didn't say you were holding...
That's stupid, guys.
I didn't...
Is this camera on me?
Yes, it's on.
That's stupid. Use your common sense.
Okay, so now he's looking at the camera. He said, is this camera on me? And then he kind of makes sure that he gets the whole frontal effect. I'm going to make sure you and I are talking together, and he's just going to lay it on as well as R. Kelly can. This gets us to cut four, and this is the cut that just made me think about somebody else. Tell me if you were thinking the same thing. This is a cut for R. Kelly talking with Gail King on CBS.
It's real young girls out there being abducted, being raped, okay? They really are on chains. They really do have chains on their wrists, and they can't get out.
Robert,
and they're ending up buried in deep.
Robert, we have to have a conversation.
This is not me.
I don't want you just ranting at the camera.
I came here for them to hear me talk.
But
I need help.
What kind of help?
This is the kind of help I need.
Yes, what kind of help?
I need somebody to help me not have a big heart. Because my heart is so big. People betray me, and I keep forgiving them.
Okay, when I heard that, I was thinking of this cut. This is the next cut, producer Elif.
You do such a disservice when you lie about things like this.
If the attackers are never found, how will you be able to heal?
I don't know. Let's just hope that they are. Let's not go there yet. I was talking to a friend, and I said, I just want them to find them. And she said, sweetie, they're not going to find them.
They're not going to find them because they don't exist, Jussie Smollett. So when I saw R. Kelly doing this big theatrical production and getting all wound up, Anna DeVlantos was right yesterday. That's an interview that shouldn't happen if you are working for R. Kelly, because he either looks out of control and dangerous, right, or he looks like a bad actor. And we just saw this show in Chicago a couple of weeks ago. It was called The Jussie Smollett Show. You know, Robin Roberts has since said on ABC, she was interviewed before the R. Kelly tape, the interview was released. Robin Roberts is now on record as saying she had real doubts about the Smollett interview. She said, but I'm a gay African-American. I'm interviewing a gay African-American. And so I had a tightrope to walk. If I had been too tough on him, it wouldn't seem sufficiently sympathetic. This is a guy who was still saying I'm a victim. But if I had gone easier on him, then people would have said, oh, well, sure, because he's on your team. So she felt like she was in a no-win proposition. But looking back, that guy was just looking at her lying, and she was generally being pretty sympathetic. I think she looks bad. She was in a no-win situation. Gayle King wasn't having it, though. When R. Kelly jumps up and starts walking around and doing his whole, you know, Jerry Maguire thing, she was just kind of sitting there, kind of chill. She was like the Cuba Gooding Jr. character also reminded me, animated and jumping around. I'm like, R. Kelly, I'm not buying it, dude. This is not working in my living room. Maybe it's working somewhere, but it ain't working for me. So Michael Avenatti, who is the attorney for some of those women, is joining Rokan again today. Do you know what hour? 4 o'clock, maybe? We'll talk to them at 3:30. How about that? Honey, loving you is the greatest thing. I get to be myself and I get to sing. I get to play the feeling responsible. I come home late, I don't love. Thank you, Steve. It's 2:37. Never forget you in my prayers. I never have a bad thing to report you. My picture on the wall. What are you doing here there, Ms. Garris?
Well, this is Belle and Sebastian that I'm playing, and they'll be playing Pitchfork on July 20th. Same day as Isley Brothers.
Yeah, so July 19th, Haim and Mavis Staples, Earl Sweatshirt, Jeremiah, Sky for a bunch of people I'm not even going to try and pronounce. July 20th, the Isley Brothers, these guys, Belle and Sebastian. July 21st, Robin, that would be the one you would go to, right?
I might, yeah.
Whitney.
Charlie XCX.
Dreezy, Tasha, Black Midi, Flasher, etc.
Ibi.
Yeah, I saw that and wasn't going to try that one. So the 3-day passes this year, $175, single day, $75. Pitchfork Music Festival's lineup just announced today. It's 2:38. So do you remember the other day we were talking about how some people want to block the seat from going back in front of them on an airport, that there's a gadget that you can buy? I was thinking a little bit of that because I got a different gadget sent to me in the mail, and it was sent by a local guy, a Chicago area guy who developed something called the Bev Ledge. And this is something else you could take on an airplane with you. And this is what it does. It's a little tray that sits into the groove by your window. So if you have a window seat, there's a little gap between the window and the fuselage of the plane, and you can stick its little wings in there, and then a little plastic tray comes out, and then you can put your beverage there. There's a place for your phone. There's a place for your buds. There's a place for your
Is it plastic or is it like hard cardboard?
The guy who invented it is named Michael Coleus, and he's sitting right here. Okay. What's it made out of, Michael? Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me so much.
What is that? Is that plastic?
It is a plastic at this time, but it's very interesting that he brings that up because that is possibly in the works for a disposable version and environmentally friendly even more so.
Oh, I see. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
So that's this thing. And the thing is, when I first saw this, right, I'm like, okay, I think that's a good idea, but I got a million questions or concerns. Mm-hmm. Like, at first I thought, is this thing going to be sturdy enough to hold my beverage? Well, Steve, you got to come down here. In fact, Elif is videotaping this. He brought in an airplane window to demonstrate it. He was the only guy walking down Michigan Avenue today carrying the side of an aircraft with an airplane window. Is that a real airplane window?
It is, actually. It's from the graveyards.
Pick one of those up.
I actually had to go south of Phoenix, in between Tucson and Phoenix, where the graveyards are.
Isn't that awesome?
It's amazing what you see there.
Go to Phoenix and just be a tourist and go to the military and commercial airplane graveyards. It's stunning what's all out there. So you go, hey, I need a window.
Yep.
What one of those bad boys run?
And there? Especially somebody with me with the passion of flying and aviation, it was something to experience.
How much that cost you? $1 million?
About 500.
So why do you have a passion for aviation?
Well, ever since I was young, I've always flown. I fly a lot. I created business flying. So I'm definitely a frequent flyer. And one of the biggest problems is this day and age, you're getting less and less room for more and more money on your flights. And I was like, how can we utilize this space, especially being in business and needing to work?
Yeah.
And when you sit down and you fill up your tray table and you have nowhere else to put your things, especially with your laptop open, it's very difficult. So I said, how can we solve this problem for
people?
Plus,
when you have the tray table that comes down from the seat back in front of you, first of all, if that person's moving around, anything on there is jiggling. I keep thinking that I'm going to have my beer there, and they're going to move, and it's all going to go flying. That's never happened to me, but I don't know why it hasn't happened. Secondly, it's not there might be a little indentation for your cup, but not much. There's nothing to hold it. Your thing on the window, it actually nestles into a little sleeve. And
it's
it
actually
holds
a support structure, is what they say.
It's kind of a three-dimensional thing.
It definitely supports your belongings, including your cell phone and your drinks.
The airlines allow you to manipulate the space that way?
They have been very interested in it, and every flight that I've taken, it's been very inspiring to see how people react to it, especially the flight crews. I've had pilots come up to me, actually bring me into the cockpit saying, don't leave the plane. Yes, that's exactly what they said, and I laughed. I said, well, let's start from, from one spot and go from there.
Maybe the airline attendants appreciate it, because at first I thought, oh, I can just see them. You know, there's so many rules, and we're all trying to just behave these days. If somebody starts setting up their gear, I can see them saying, but in a way, this would be advantageous to them, because you're better able to get up and down and not spill your drinks.
It reduces spillage, keeps the cabin cleaner.
Yes.
And one of the biggest things that they do like about it is it does not prevent any sort of problem with exiting in case of an emergency, because it's not in your way. Even just getting up and going to the bathroom, I've always thought, where do I put my drink? And I'm like, I used to put it in my shoe. I mean, what else do you do? I did not want to spill my drink.
First of all, you're not supposed to take off your shoes.
Okay. I never knew that.
There's two kind of people in the world, those that take off their shoes on the airplane and those that don't.
Okay.
You do.
I guess I'm one of those.
I guess I slip mine off, but I wouldn't walk socked up and down the aisle. You do. I think maybe there's more of you than there are of me. So
ever since I had the Bevledge, I haven't had to.
Right. It's a moot point now. So you've again, Elif took video of this. Elif, where are we going to post the video so people can see what we're talking about here? Where are you going to post the video?
Well, it's already on Instagram now, and then it's going to go up on Facebook later, after the show.
I'm WGN King John on all social media, so if you're on Insta, you can see what we're talking about. Elif just took some video and put it up, and then where else are you going to put it afterwards? On our Facebook page?
Yes.
On the station page?
Both the station page and your own page.
Okay, so like WGN King John or WGN Radio on Facebook to see what we're talking about. And this guy, Michael, has developed this locally. Are you an inventor? Have you come up with other gadgets and whatnot?
I have a design background. So this is a result of my creative design and entrepreneurial drive, my fascination with air travel. And I'm very proud to say that this product is not only just made in the USA, it's originated and created in Chicagoland, just like I am.
Where do you guys
I love this city.
Where are you guys out of? Where do you operate? You probably operate out of your basement. I mean, this is kind of a cottage thing right now, isn't it?
Out of Chicago and a couple of the suburbs, the near suburbs, yes. It's all created and made here, made in Chicago.
It's called Bevledge.
Yes, Bevledge.
And it's a little plastic. When you get it, it's just like flat plastic, but then it folds out into a sort of clicks into place, and then the little wings go into the groove between the window and the side of the airplane there, and it fits right in and then sits there, and it's amazingly sturdy and functional.
Exactly.
So
it's very simple but effective.
What's the bill on one of these? What does it cost?
$14.99.
$14.99.
Yes, for a one-time investment, which I've had mine for 5 years, ever since I started this project, and it's virtually indestructible.
That is, you've had it for all those years when you started the project.
Yes. How long have you flown with it all those years?
How long have you been selling it?
It only came out since December, so it's new on the market. It's a brand new travel accessory. That's why I'm so excited to be able to announce it. And
is it in stores? Is it on Amazon?
It's on Amazon. You can purchase it today on Amazon for $14.99.
Search BevLedge?
Yes, exactly. And we have a full website, BevLedge.com, if you'd like to see any more information. We're also getting into promotional products. I think corporations are really interested in putting in even printing their name on
logos
it.
Logos on
exactly,
it? Hello?
Yes, exactly. We're looking at that route. I think it's a great idea, and I'm very excited. It's very.
Have suitcase companies approached you?
Yes, that's one of my ideas because it fits into practically every carry-on bag that you could carry on. It's so portable. It's so portable. It's so easy to carry.
This should be an accessory with the bag.
Exactly. Exactly.
Said me.
Luggage companies are definitely a great idea.
Hey, if you're a luggage company, give us a call. 312-981-7200. BevLedge.com.
Correct.
I want some of the action.
All right.
All right, not. So, the thing slides in there. What about the different kinds of airplanes? What if I'm on a jumbo jet or a smaller jet?
It works in majority of almost every large commercial aircraft, of the large aircraft, which is a lot of commercial jets.
Yeah, right.
Yes, 95%.
So the cup slits in there, the phone slits in there, pen. I suppose you lay awake at night thinking, oh, I could do this. I could change it around that way. This, if I can do this, what else could I do?
Oh, people come up with all kinds of things. You can put your sunglasses on there. You know, you can hang your eyeglasses, sunglasses.
I've usually got a book, magazine. You know, I'm a big reader, and so I'll always have something to read. Mm-hmm. A lot of us are watching, though, the screens now, aren't we? We're watching movies on airplanes.
But somebody posted the other day on I believe it was Facebook, what they were utilizing it, and they stuck their rolled-up newspaper in the back of it, between the window.
Actually, that would
which is
work.
Creative.
Or I could roll up my magazine and put it in the cup holder.
Correct.
Because it's kind of deep. It would go down that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People are creative. They'll come up with their own creative ideas.
You could put an orange there, too, now that I think about it, if you travel with oranges. Well, okay, so this is called BevLedge, BevLedge. It's a new product on the market, so if you know somebody who's a traveler or a frequent traveler, I guess this would be at least worth checking out by Plane Smart Pro. This is your company, Plane Smart Products.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great unique gift for any airline traveler.
Yeah, I just want to come up with some more stuff. I want to come up with some more
me
ideas.
Me too.
What do you think about keeping people from sitting their seat back and hitting the other person in the knees?
It's getting more crowded on each plane, and you know the fees are going up. That's why this is such a great little accessory to have for just a one-time cost. You're going to have it for many years and many flights to come.
There is a gadget that keeps the person from being able to put their
seat
back.
Yes, there is. I'm not fully aware of it, but I think they did. Some people did have a problem with that.
I think you should have one of those.
Yeah.
Don't invent that. Don't come up with a better version of that.
Yeah, that's right in the aisleway, too. That's actually...
Okay, how about this? What about you do something where when I do put the tray back down in front of me, it's got a little grid around it or you know something I put on there that makes that more functional? Because right now it's just a surface that stuff can slide on.
There are certain reasons why the airline does that, but that's the great thing about the BevLedge. It is strict. It's really, truly out of the way. It's in space that's really just found space that's not being used.
Okay, here's another argument
nice
we have on airplanes.
That. Yes.
What do you say? You've got the window seat, which means you control the window and the light coming in for that area of the airplane. Who should get to control that window shade?
Well, just so you know, the shade can come down and function just like it should.
Ah.
It does. It will shade still. It rests right on top of the BevLedge, which is perfect.
So up or down, it'll still work.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. So that's really up to the person. I've seen people in the middle seat, a mother in the middle seat with a child at the window who loves to sit at the window, and they both use the BevLedge. And when they both have to get up to use the washroom, they both have a place to put their drink.
Their stuff.
So it's not just the window seat. It can be for you and a companion. It could be
that's right, because Brenda and I, we're usually traveling three across on that aisle. And so if one of us got, would you hold my drink? Would you do this?
Exactly.
You got to rearrange all your stuff. You can just set it right there.
Uh-huh. It gives you more options, especially even for the middle
I think
seat.
This is a going thing, Michael. Okay. Anything else you want to pass along? Text has just poured in. John, have you ever taken this to Shark Tank?
I have not yet. I've been.
We got a guy coming on
many,
tomorrow
many people
who went to Shark Tank.
I'm not there yet. I just hit the market.
Well, this is
and
it.
Yeah,
let's go to Shark Tank.
I'm looking forward to it.
But I mean, do you need them because you've already got the product? The only thing they, I guess, would offer is capital, right?
Exactly.
So have you gone to a bank and said, hey, I need $75,000 to make more of these or get it in stores? I need displays. How does that go?
I hope those problems arise. hoping I would like to meet Lori. Lori lives here from Shark Tank. That would be a great person.
Which Lori? Lori Cochran or Corcoran?
No, Lori Rainier from Shark Tank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
She's a Chicago, I believe, Chicago native. So, or she's living here. I've always thought about Shark Tank.
Look at this. John, I bought one of these Bev ledges on Amazon. My husband travels a lot. It will arrive on Friday. So that's either a brand new customer or somebody who's had one previous to your coming on. I'll bet that's a brand. You should advertise on this radio station.
Yes, that's great.
Or very expensive. John, please explain what Pitchfork is for this baby boomer. Well, that doesn't have anything to do with you. Pitchfork's a concert.
Yeah.
It's at, is it Union Park in Chicago? Pitchfork is a concert. Okay, well, good luck to you. I so appreciate you making the effort to bring the airplane window with you and setting it up and showing us. Again, Elif took the video.
That's great.
So if you want to see what this local entrepreneur is up to, it's on my Instagram page. I'm WGN King John on Instagram, and we'll also put it on our Facebook pages here at WGN Radio a little later on. Good luck. And
thank you so much.
I think that's a good price point, too, by the way.
Yeah.
I think you could have charged $29.99. Yeah. It would have been worth it, but, you know, let's get it out the
door.
It'll
last for years and years, and you know what? There may be a disposable option. It might only last once or twice, but this one will last many years.
Yeah, I mean, the one we're talking about right now for $14.99 is a durable plastic.
Practically indestructible.
It's very thin and lightweight, though. I think you've actually constructed that really well.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Appreciate it.
All right, nice to meet you. Thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, it's 2:51. This is WGN.
In the very latest interview, R. Kelly says he wants to get beyond his past.
But attorney Michael Avenatti tells us why R. Kelly's past is his problem.
That comes your way at 3:40.
And we'll lighten things later with the St. Patrick's Snoozeroos.
Broke On with Anna Devlantis. Chicago's conversation is on 720 WGN.
Hi, it's Steve Cochran here with Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth. It is great to see you, my friend.
Great to be with you, Steve.
You've also said this many times, and it's one of your mantras, and that is, nobody's paying you to retire. So when you first get to that point where nobody's giving you a paycheck anymore, you have to be able to pay yourself.
I've had this story so many times, Steve, with clients, that they knew intellectually that they weren't going to get any more paychecks.
But until it happened.
But when it happened, 2 weeks after they stopped working, there was no check deposited. It really, really comes home. And then you start thinking, well, hold on just a moment. It's going to be the rest of my life with no paycheck. So how do you spend the next 30 years of your life without a paycheck?
And it's not a finite amount of money you have now, because the key is to take the money you have now, have it make more money.
That's true. And you really need to develop an income plan versus just trying to build your pile of money as big as possible and to pick at it. I mean, if you think back to 2007, 2008, people that were trying to do that, they just had a big portfolio and they're taking money out of it. 2008, their portfolio got cut in half.
Right.
You want to see some unhappy people. You're no longer working. You have half the money that you used to have.
And it's not like it can't happen again.
It will happen again. The only question is when.
Right.
If you're 5 to 10 years from retirement, you better treat it like that could happen any day. Steve, since we're talking about this, I'd like to do something special for our listeners today. Folks, we're going to sit down with you personally and build you a full-blown retirement income plan, complimentary for the...
We're talking about Pitchfork a lot on the show today. They announced their lineup here in Chicago. The Isley Brothers featured and Mavis Staples, and then a bunch of other younger, hipper indie bands and regular bands and bands and bands. 847 texted in, "Hi, John. I'm 59 years old. This is my 7th year of Pitchfork. 12 years at Lala. Love the show. Have a good time. John, I'd vote for Shock again. Signed, Sleepless in Peoria." And earlier, we started the show with a conversation with a doctor at Northwestern who's at an AIDS conference, or a conference about antiviruses. And he was talking to us about this news this week that a second patient now has been, quote unquote, cured of their HIV. Or was it, did they use the word AIDS in that? But we talked about this breakthrough. And this texter says, "John, I've been HIV positive for 10 years, am undetectable. My wife is still negative." And the doctor just explained to us how with the medication these days, if you are HIV positive, or in fact, if you have AIDS, with the drugs now, not only can they almost completely restore your immune system, but you can then go on to having a near normal lifespan. You can be sexually active, and you are non-transmittable when you are on the medication that they have these days. Okay, to continue. The Sterigenics plant in Willowbrook was recently shut down by the Illinois EPA. You knew that, right? This shutdown was ordered following mounting evidence that the area surrounding the Sterigenics facility has some of the highest cancer rates in the country. According to news reports, Sterigenics has been emitting extremely high levels of ethylene oxide gas for decades, a chemical that's been shown to significantly increase the risk of cancer. News reports assert that Sterigenics has known for 30 years about the threat that their facility posed to nearly 20,000 people around Willowbrook. They allegedly tried to cover it up by running secret sites, dumping chemicals into the public sewer system. Scientific testing found the Willowbrook area had its highest levels of cancer-causing gas to date. If you live or work near the Sterigenics facility in Willowbrook and have been diagnosed with a cancer linked to that gas, contact the personal injury lawyers at GWC right now, 312-999-9999. Yep, 312, then dial 9, or visit JusticeStartsToday.com. Okay, Rokan, Anna DeVlantis, and the gang in the newsroom with the stories that matter. That would be the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom all coming up. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis are in Studio A where they belong. Hi, guys. Stand by.
Do we really belong here?
Because you are like, you're Mr. A-plus, Mr. Rokan. Michael Avenatti and Aaron Brockovich today.
That's right. That's
crying
one,
out loud.
One A and one E right there in terms of where they're going to be. We got Michael Avenatti coming up in the next hour to talk about the R. Kelly rant and rave. We're going to play a little bit of that also coming up here. And there's new audio of R. Kelly's, the two of the women that he's been associated with who are defending him and saying that their parents are lying.
His girlfriends who have not seen their parents in years, that the family say they've been brainwashed by him.
Wait, the girls have been brainwashed?
Yes.
Right. These two women, 21 and 23, they're living with him, and he says they want to be doing that. The parents say he's brainwashed them and cut off all contact.
And we just learned a really interesting fact from an individual known to us who had done some work in R. Kelly's house here in Chicago in the 1990s that will shock
people. Absolutely.
Not something I've never heard brought up in the trial or in anything.
Really?
Else. Yeah.
All right.
So we will share all of that.
He lives in Trump Tower now, though, right?
I don't know where he lives.
Pretty sure he does.
He's got, I think, the,
pretty sure, yeah.
Were they doing the
that's where they did the interview.
The interviews, but the interviews were at maybe the Trump Hotel, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
What are you, Lou Manfredini over there now? Just a shout out to all of these potential sponsors.
Little Trump Tower.
I got news for you. If Donald Trump is listening, he's not buying commercials on your show, Rokan.
Thank you, Jen.
Goodbye.